Okay, morning everybody for the latest edition of podcasts, Window Boxes for iWin as part of the WCI. This week, our guest is Kay White. Kay White is a very inspirational career mentor and guide, an author of A to Z of Being Understood and It's Always Your Move. She also has a website, kaywhite.com, which I really urge you to go and look at. And particularly, there's a power pack in there on See Other on the drop-down menu, which is a power pack about working from home. Kay, I think, is really interesting because she had a 25-year broking career at Willis and came in as I think it was a secretary, wasn't it, Kay, and then worked your way up to a director role. And then suddenly had an about face and created her own company, very successful business in career advice and mentoring. And so I thought it'd be really interesting to talk to you today, Kay, about the situation that we find ourselves in today, because I think there's a lot of reinvention maybe about to take place for people who have had a chance to take a pause and stop and think about what they want to do. And you're one of those people that I know that have done that, as well as being a career mentor for me. I find that you've got some great advice, but not always understood your own journey, I think. And it might be quite interesting to pick your brains around that and how you changed and what inspired you to do that and how you did it. So I'm going to hand over to you just to briefly introduce yourself and what you do much better than I have done. And then we'll take it from there.
Thank you, Karen. To say that I coach career women, essentially career women, and I will always say, and a few very smart men, because often the women, we tend to know when we need some support, or we know when we're stuck, and we kind of, and we tend to be more forward in coming forward to say, you know, I want some help, or I'm open to learning. And I'm not saying men aren't, I just sometimes think they think they'll work it out for themselves. And sometimes they get really stuck as well, let's be honest. And what actually tends to happen is a lot of my clients bring their husbands, partners, boyfriends or friends and say, will you have a chat with him and just see where he's at? So I'm working at the moment with three different husbands of current clients who are also struggling with what next, what does this mean, what do I want now? I've tried this, it's not working. And these are the kind of challenges that come up for women. So I essentially work with corporate career women who have got to sort of just below management level or just on it, and who often find that the skills and the actions and the connections that got them there are not enough to keep them buzzing along, or also to keep them on the path that they want to be and get them to that next level, or even keep them where they are, because it's not always about everyone wanting to be the CEO, clearly not at all. So my work comes in when a woman tends to think, you know what, I've tried everything and I see people going past me, I see other people getting options that I ought to have, and why is, you know, what am I not doing? And that's where my smart moves for corporate career women, which is my title, if you will, comes in. But it wasn't, Karen, as you know yourself, a straight line. I didn't wake up one morning and think, hey, I'm a smart moves mentor for corporate career women. How great is this? Let me get going. It's a path and a roller coaster and all those other metaphors that you hear, but it truly was and still is. And I still have moments where I throw myself on the floor metaphorically and think, I can't work out what to do with this and technology. And so I think it's very, one of the first things I wanted to say is to take away the rose-tinted glasses that we can all wear, thinking, oh, one day I'll own my own business and it'll all be easy. Because it's not, all the time.
So, you know, you were 25 years at Willis, and, you know, then you, what drove you to suddenly make that change? Were you feeling sort of out of sorts, not in the right place? Were you frustrated by things, and you just had this desire to create your own space and be successful in? And did you know what that was when you decided to take a break from Willis?
That's a lot of questions.
I'm sorry, it is. I'm doing a BBC interviewer. I'm just going to ask one question and ask about nine. Sorry, go for it, Kay.
So I started my working life at Willis as a secretary, very keen, straight out of secretarial college. I say that because I had no idea what insurance was. I knew I needed it third party for my car, and I hadn't dreamt about being an insurance broker. My father was an underwriter, as often happens, or certainly used to happen back in the day. It was a very nepotistic, is that word, the word?
Yep.
Yeah. Environment. And my dad worked for Willis. He'd worked at Howden's, he'd worked at Stuart Wrightson, and he found himself at Willis. And he said, when I was looking around, looking at the Ministry of Defence, who actually turned me down, they didn't think I was civil servant material. They were right, as far as I've evolved. And so my dad said, well, why don't you come and have a chat with the old family firm? Now, Willis is clearly back in the day was essentially that sort of environment where people knew people. And I mean, a lot of the market was. So that's what I did. And I was asked if I wanted to work in this overseas training department when Willis's used to sponsor people from all over the world, from our clients, to come and have 6 months in London and learn about the market and learn to speak English. We had lots of people from, you know, all over the world. So I was thrown in at 18 as a bright-eyed secretary who could speak a little French. And suddenly I'm introducing the chairman of X to the chairman of Johnson Higgins whilst talking to the board director. Yep. And I'm only 19 at this point, 18, 19. So my boss at the time, very supportive, taught me so much. And I was a bit of a Svengali kind of, he was a Svengali for me. Yeah. He taught me how to say, you know, I said that something is the epitome of bad taste when I read it out of the paper. And he's like, okay, that's the epitome. There's a way of saying certain words. And I would he would try and encourage me to have Earl Grey tea, and I'd spit it out, say, oh, it's horrible. Try something. So he was very much an early mentor to me. And from that point, to fast forward, I loved that. And I did that role on and off because I did have a swift swerve into headhunting and then was asked to come back to Willis after the year that I wasn't that happy and my boss wasn't that happy with who he replaced me with. And I came back with obviously negotiating a possibility of more responsibility and obviously money. I came back to Willis. So I did have a little career break, but headhunting was also a part of the path. I learned a lot about CVs, how to put them together, how interviews go, because I used to shadow my boss. So this is a thing, Karen, with anyone's path. There are all sorts of people and influences that you bring with you that get you to where you are today. So fast forward a few more years working with Ted, who is my Svengali, I suddenly knew that I was bored, for want of a better word. And I didn't want to be, as it was at the time, the overseas training manager. I was bored with it. I would see people in teams having fun, and I'd be part of these teams because I'd take a visitor to see them and have a chat. And then I'd have to go, and I'd be just in this little kind of corner being the overseas training manager assistant. Yeah. And I just said, no, it's time for me to change. So because I knew so many people within Willis, because I was around and about all the time, this is another thing about our working world now, connections, it's everything. Yes. I was able to ask a few senior people in all the different departments, you know, I'm looking to move. This is a brief bio of me. Are there any openings? So I did it myself, but I did obviously include my boss in this and also HR at the time, personnel as it was called back in the day. And I was picked up, if you will, as far as, we'll give her a go, by Global Property and Casualty, which was just international at the time. And so I started with obviously a lot of knowledge of Willis and a lot of connections that were really useful in the broking and account exec role to be able to go to people, but absolutely no idea about how to put an insurance contract together, what it meant, what a percentage and a per mil was, you know, all of these phrases. So I did start very green, and that was in 1989. On the broking side. And I had, again, a very supportive, mentoring kind of boss who also was so, so helpful, if you like, and let's put brackets, controlling. He did too much for me. He helped me too much. And this is another thing that I've learned in my own path of actually, if you over support your team, you don't let them fall over and you don't let them grow and they rely on you. And then when you're not there, it's like, I don't know what to do. So as a result of working with him for a while, I started to sort of shift away, thinking, you know, and other opportunities came up. And I went to, my boss was French, and I wanted to learn French. And I said to him that I would be really excited to go and work in France and work on some French business. And that ultimately happened as well, because I asked, which is another principle, rather than waiting for someone to ask you. So anyway, the shorter version of all of this, you can hear there was quite a lot going on, and I became a divisional director, which wasn't as senior as I probably could have got to at the time. But I was told by my boss, one of my appraisers, well, if you want the next level, Ken, if you want the bells and whistles and you want this, that and the other, and obviously the finances that go with it, you need to have a bigger team, you need to have bigger budgets, you need to travel more, you need to produce more business. And at the time, I knew I was kind of close to done. I just knew I didn't want to do this anymore. And I didn't want to do it at the pace I was doing. I wanted to have a social life. I just met my husband to be at the time. And I was like, there's more to life than insurance. And at the time, my boss said, yes, Kay, there is more to life than insurance. There's reinsurance.
but that bit there, when you just said, I just knew I didn't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
What was that? Was that just about the time that you were spending, just not having the passion for what it was you were doing? What was the thing that was really that bit?
Well, it crept up on me, really. It was a combination of, as I said, my personal life playing out in a way that I was enjoying it, seeing somebody who was in the market, who was an underwriter, who'd go home at 5 o'clock, whereas at 5 o'clock we'd all be settling down for a nice team meeting that would go until sometimes till 7. Yeah, let's get in touch with America, let's make sure that we get this to Australia in the morning. And there was that going on at the same time as we kept obviously retaining accounts, so we kept winning the accounts back, which is all good, except the account executive, me, was bored again with working on the same issue, management things, the same reports. Okay. And so it was one of the things that I said, can't we swap things about? But of course the client doesn't always like you swapping about. But for me, I had a combination. I have said this. I've said this on stage, and I know people are a bit, but I knew that if I didn't manage my performance was going to be managed by somebody else, because I was not in a good place. I was grumpy, a bit stroppy about things. And I did have a phrase I used to my boss who laughed. I said, I could rip someone's throat out at the way I feel at the time, because I'm so frustrated. I have to do something else. It crept up on me, but it also had energy around it that I just thought, I've got to do something else. And I didn't know what that was. And here's the thing, Karen, they've said it's a full-time job, finding another full-time job, because it is a lot of, you know, back and forth thing and thinking. And I had worked since I was 18, and it's not, you know, a medal. I couldn't have children. So I didn't have any break that I had made for myself. Not that I would say that having a child is in any way necessary a break, but it is a career shift.
It's a pause, isn't it? It's a bit, you pause things for a bit and you work how to pick things up. And they're often different pre and post childcare as well, aren't they? So, you know, there is a break there of some description.
Well, as you said, normal working life. You know. So anyway, rather than anything else, I didn't take very long. I knew I had 3 months to reserve, 3 months notice. And I'd had a 6 month endowment. I had 6 months worth of money, if you like, that wasn't going to change anything. So I did do my sort of, damaged imitation here. And I thought, in 6 months, I will have some time and I will work out what it is I want to do. I won't sit still. And I had looked, Karen, this is the thing about going back to what you know, or also thinking, how could I build on what I've already done?
Yeah.
I thought, and I was looking at these websites while I was still at Willis, Sex in the City, which is SECS, Secretaries in the City. Listen to that. Because I thought, you know what? I could go from, what I'm earning now, but I could start earning 25 grand as a secretary. I could run my boss's life because I did it before and I could do it again, but he'd probably be scared of me because I'm quite dynamic now. But I did think I could start again in another industry, but I just can't do this anymore. And this is one of the lessons that I use and bring to my clients. I wasn't strategic when I resigned. I had a really supportive boss, a big company. I was well known, and I would like to say well liked. I'm 6 foot tall, so I'm a character that gets remembered. So kind of people knew me around the place as well. And I didn't sit down with him, as I now recommend, that if there is a chink of opportunity where you are, rather than you're, you know, there's all sorts of reasons why you want to leave. I didn't sit down and say, look, you know, I'm really good at marketing. I'm really good at angles on things. I'm good at language. I'm good with people. I just can't do all of this. What else can I do? Where else are the opportunities here? Okay. He would have helped me. He even said to me, Kay, give me some clues. I'll, you know, what can I do?
Okay. And so, and you think that was, so when was that, Kay? What kind of year are we in roughly now?
When 2002.
That, so 2002, I think today there are many different kinds of facets in companies, aren't there? You've got different marketing, you've got podcasts, you've got social media teams, you've got all sorts of different things as well as the underlying business. Do you think there was an outlet within the structure of the company at that time in 2002 that could have met your needs? You know, I mean, I think today it's a really good question to ask, but at the time...
Yes, you know, I do, if I think back, because I put together broking documents and, right, and brochures that I was told, you know, these are really great. These should be the cornerstone of what we do as a whole division. Go around and talk to people about how you put it together, what, you know, and so I'd already, you know, had the clue, if you like, the breadcrumbs of what else I could do. So to have thought to myself, you know what, where does this become a company-wide thing? What marketing, PR, whatever part of Willis would this fit still with the business edge? Yeah. And if I'd been able to articulate that, which again is about knowing what you're good at, what people comes naturally to you. These are questions I ask clients, you know, what do people often come to you for? What can you do with your eyes closed? I could write an underwriting submission with all that was necessary to make it legal, but with a story and a broke, if you like, that made it interesting versus a whole load of spreadsheets. And that was one of the things that I now encourage other women to find. It's like, you know, what do you do that you just know? You just, someone can bring you something or a problem and you just know where to start and you're good at it. People come to you for it. And people often came to me for writing broking letters. Yeah. So that was a clue towards something that would lead me to what I do now. But at the same time, I couldn't see it. It was too close and I was frustrated.
But I'm not sure what I want the answer to be here. I think I do know. But in the light of looking back now, where you are now and the success that you've driven for yourself, do you regret not asking that you might, if you'd have asked, you might have got, oh, this'd be great. It's a great position over here, Kay. You can go and do it there. Do you regret that?
In a yes or no, which that is, question, I would say no. If you said, what do you think about, this is the trouble about interviewing a coach. I'm sorry, you're asking all the
questions. No, stop it.
I love it and I'm teasing you. I would say that it worked out okay. I have absolutely used that story, though, as a strategic what not to do.
I understand that, yeah.
So I said to you, and it's so true, I heard this said by Robin Roberts, who is a journalist on Good Morning America, has a fantastic story. And her mother said to her, Robin, make your mess your message.
Oh, I like that. Make your mess your message.
And what she meant and what I take from that is we all have stories where it's like, oh my gosh, if I had to learn that lesson again, you know, hit me with a stick. If I can't believe I didn't do this. And so making that, turning that around, taking the lesson from it and then using it to help others.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I love that. So I have to a point made my mess my message. It worked out okay, but it wasn't a straight line. And the short version of from there to now is resigning, 3 months notice, working, having 6 months literally off.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what I wanted to do and I just hadn't had the time. And one of my ex-colleagues who had moved to Aon at that time, I had lunch with him somewhere in the market. And I said to him, what's happened to you? You seem really different. He was interested in me. He was asking lots of questions, not being as he had been like, yeah, hey, I'm great. And, you know, let me tell you more about me. He was being, and I said, you know, what's happened to you? And he said, well, I've had a coach. Aon have paid for me to have a coach about, you know, my next path and projection and, you know, my career move next. And she reminded me of you. She's very, you know, open, chatty, but also, you know, can go there with you. Because that was one of the things, another the clues, in Willis, I had my office, you know, I shared a sort of area in the corner, and I had a chair, and people used to call it Kay's Corner, or, you know, okay. And I come on, and they talk to me about their girlfriends and all sorts of, because I think I have that natural ability to go there with people without being all sort of, oh dear, you poor thing, you know, objective.
Yep.
So again, these are these clues about what do people come to you for. And this guy had coaching, and he said, have you thought about it? And of course, at the time, back in the day, 2002, coaching was something, you know, a coach was something you went on holiday with if your parents didn't fly. And, you know, the idea of, I had no idea what it was, basically. So I had a part-time job for the British Heart Foundation, I found through a connection of mine, which kept me in beer and tights. I mean, literally, it was a fraction of what I used to earn, but I was able.
That's so much better than beer and cigarettes, isn't it, Kate? Beer and tights, really.
You know, I was able to keep ticking over and also be out there. I think this is the thing.
Yeah.
Even doing something that you know isn't your forever job, it's a stepping stone job.
Yeah.
This is one of the things that I say to women now, and they get terribly fretty about their CV. And I said, as long as your story, we can create a story for why you worked at the British Heart Foundation for a year. It was a stepping stone. I contributed. I had a family history of heart disease. You know, it makes sense. It's not about looking at your CV in a kind of list of, oh my gosh, she jumps about. What did you do from, you know, there's a story to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very, no, you just sort of set me thinking that we worry about things like that, what our CV looks like and having those stepping stones. And it always has to be an up stepping stone, doesn't it? Whereas, you know, it doesn't have to be like that, does it? It can be more flexible. It can be your own career path, not modelled on other people's or the norm. You've just got to have that story. But I think that's a fear thing, isn't it? That you get constrained into structures that actually, you know, you might be better out of, and explain yourself better and be more interesting and more valuable if people understand the motivations behind why you're doing what you're doing.
Well, one of the things that I heard, I think it was in, I can't remember which, I think it was in Forbes or one of these articles a long time ago now, that the career ladder really doesn't exist in the same way. Companies are much flatter. I mean, you worked at Score, it was a matrix, and you know, companies are much flatter, and you can, I think it was Stephen Covey that said, you can have your career, you know, your ladder, is it up against the wrong wall?
Yeah.
Is it trying to climb and trying to, you know, thinking it's something you should do. And it's more of a lattice. And I love that, because a lattice is like a web.
Yeah.
And if you think about now having a sideways move, a bit like snakes and ladders, you might have to go back a couple of steps for 6 months and then boom, you've retrained, reskilled.
Yeah.
You know, and it's only our perception of ourselves that really, really matters. We tend to get terribly, you know, tangled up. People would say to me, okay, but you'll have to give your BMW back. And, oh, you know, well, who will you be when you haven't got director after your name and you're not working for Willis? And I'm like, I don't know. I want to go and find out.
Yeah. I do admit,
I didn't have children and I did have a cushion. But you know, certainly at the time, Snowy and I could not afford for me not to work.
Yeah.
And you know, so for me, I definitely took this time to regroup. And I think this is what I find with my work: women give themselves the gift of some time to think for themselves, not to have a glass of Chardonnay with a girlfriend and say, "Have you ought to speak to my boss?" It's really strategic thinking. And I think, you know, to be fair to why we know each other, that. Yeah. A lot of what happened for you, and you've kind of like boom.
That's like, well, so you know, just to clarify that, you know, I first met Kay as she was my professional career coach when I was at Score, and we've since become friends, which is just an added bonus of that relationship, really. It is the bonus of that relationship. And but you have that knack, and you sort of, you mentioned it earlier, why people come and talk to you, and that you're very, there are places that you're not fearful to go in a way that's very matter of fact and questioning. And you know, you made me, you asked me some really hard questions that I found them really hard to answer. because I didn't necessarily want to answer them. So I understand entirely why you say that when you're that kind of person that, you know, you will go where a lot of people fear to go, I think, but in a way that's entirely constructive. And so I think it is this whole career path thing. I find it really interesting because it's making that time to think about it for yourself, isn't it? And what you want to do and where's that passion. It doesn't have to not be linked to what you're currently doing. It might just look a bit different, but it's when you have the time to do that, isn't it? And I think,
I call it giving yourself the gift of the time.
Yeah.
And you can invest in, a spa weekend and a Mulberry handbag or whatever your thing would be. But for the effective investment of that, working with someone like myself, not clearly myself, but, someone had to help you think through objectively, not be married to that person, not be their best mate, but to actually be able to have an objective view.
Yeah. And it is a very, it's a very, I find it just hugely, off the charts, good for me. Because you kind of take a moment to just stop and think about what it is you want to do, how you want to use your skills, where you want to head to next. And that might look very different, actually, might look very different. So you set up your business, okay? Career coaching for smart corporate career women. How did that, you look at the career journey, it sounds easy. I don't think it is easy, by the way. So this rose-colored glasses, you whipped them off. What was the most challenging thing when you stepped out of because I think the thing about corporate environments, somebody asked me the other day, is when you start out on a different road, you suddenly lose a whole lot of framework that you've had before, whether it's structure around the office day, whether it's things like medical, the healthcare stuff, all of that sort of support network that you get around being employed by a corporate goes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what was the most challenging thing?
The thing that pops up for me, and I still have a copy of it, is the first check I received for my personal services. Because if you think about it, I wasn't offering, nor am I still, widgets, photo frames. I was offering time with me for a change, for a transformation.
Yeah.
And to actually have found my first client who was a connection, because again, coming back to your network, networks are everything, everywhere, all the time for everything, but we don't often think about that. Who do you know who? Karen, do you know anyone who? We always go on recommendations of plumbers and electricians. Why not on, who do you know who works in an industry that I want to talk to somebody about? Who would give me a coffee? These kind of questions that I encourage. My trickiest time was actually deciding, okay, this is what my rate's going to be. And at the time it was £75 an hour, which seemed a lot, which obviously is back in the day. And I worked with a friend of my father's care home manager. There's a big connection. I just said, I told her that I was doing this. And she said, oh God, one of my friends, and I'm still in touch with him, Spencer. He wants to do XYZ with his career and he's all over the show. Would you have a coffee with him? So one of the biggest challenges when you start your own business is being prepared, particularly in services, rather than selling, because there's obviously a cost of making something and a profit margin. When it's your time, you kind of got to treat yourself like a commodity.
Yeah.
And that is a big struggle, particularly for women, how to charge for their time versus, I'll do it for free and let me help you. And, as long as you'll give me a testimonial. Well, that works for a little while, but it's not a business. It's a hobby.
Yeah.
And so one of the biggest shifts you have to make, or certainly I had to make, was being comfortable talking about what, the investment to work with me. I never say the cost. It's a very different word.
No.
Investment. Because it's an investment in yourself through me. And once I got that in my head, I don't see myself as a charge and an expense. It's like, if you want this transformation and I think we're a fit and I think I can help you, then this is the investment and this is how it will work.
Okay.
How do you want, which card would you like to use? I have become very comfortable with that because I know I've done it myself.
Yes.
I've invested thousands and thousands of pounds in my own personal development to be able to do
it. And I was just going to come back to that and just getting you to refer to that because, in sort of leaving Willis, setting up this, you did go and train, didn't you? You did sort of set out and educate yourself about this whole coaching and mentoring world. So I know that you
I did personal coaching and did that through an organization. I mean, it's a very kind of murky world as far as who you really recognize. It's not like there's an Oxford University version. But at the same time, I wanted for myself to have some form of qualification and also a real understanding of it, because I was fascinated by it. And one of the funniest things that happened when my first coaching weekend, where I was so sort of, you know, wired and came away with all these questions that started to unlock things. And I was chatting over dinner with my husband, and he sort of said, right, you know, he'd heard enough kind of thing, you know, the sort of signs that they start to fold their arms and pack up. And I said, no, before we close, Snowy. He was like, before we close, it's my dining room, woman. And I was so, I could feel myself so, you know, impassioned, if you like, by this possibility of being able to be with someone and do more of what I did naturally. So I also, so I did one-to-one coaching for a long time,
right,
2 or 3 years. And then in 2010, I decided through meeting somebody else who said, you ought to take a look at, you know, what they're doing and mentoring and online, and it's, you know, going to start to explode. So I put myself on a mastermind track, if you will, with a mentor in the States, Lisa Sasevich, who a lot of people won't have ever heard of. But she made multiple millions of dollars working from home with two young children, teaching basically women how to sell without being salesy. That was her thing at the time. Now her whole world has changed, but I needed to know that. And I didn't want to know that from somebody who went there and taught me when she came back to England. I wanted to learn it from the source.
Yeah.
So there was an investment in that, and that isn't straightforward for everybody. And clearly at the moment you can't jump on a plane and go very many places, but you can do that now online. You can actually learn from someone, if you like, a long way ahead of you, rather than someone who's just a bit ahead of you. And that's the inspirational bit. She was the one that encouraged me to write my first book. She was the one that encouraged me to teach my first book while I was still writing it. So my students were only 2 weeks behind me.
Yeah.
Put my feet to the flames, Karen.
What a bad week do you not come up with your chapter, Kay? Really?
So I suppose the point of sharing this, Karen, and for, you know, for anyone listening to this, is, you know, you have to put yourself out there. You have to let go of the safety of what you know, not recklessly. I haven't done any of this recklessly, and I haven't risked my marriage and my home life. It's one of the most important things that I actually got straight. I wasn't going to put that at risk. I didn't want to travel all the time. But you have to let go of the safety of corporate, if you will, if that's your thing, or the safety of that particular role and all the people you know, and fly through the air a bit, to use that metaphor, before the next one appears. You know this for yourself.
And that's interesting, because, you know, you've sort of used that example with you and masterminding in the States. You know, that could be relevant for anybody, really. With a particular special field or thing they're interested in, they can take this time that they might find themselves with now and look to do that, and to come out of this strange period that we're in with a whole heap more skills than they went in. Hopefully that will be one of the upsides of all of this. And by my calculations here, you said you set up your business in 2002. Well, you're heady coming up for 20 years next year of your own business. And in a 3 more years after that, Kay, you will have matched your career at Willis.
I know.
That's a real landmark, I think, isn't it? It's really interesting that you go all this way with a company for 25 years. You think, oh, 25 years of my life has been invested in that company. But the reinvention, not the reinvention, that's not quite right, the word, but reinvention is all, you know, is as more successful, I would say, than your first 25 years. You don't just have to do one thing, do you?
So, no, absolutely. And I think what's also encouraging, and I heard your interview with Rosemary Beaver, who I'm fascinated to hear her story. And you can hear in there how, you know, you bring people with you. You bring that mentor that taught you this. You bring that person who really didn't teach you much and that you didn't like working for. And you bring that lesson.
Oh, yeah.
Bring the mess and all of that. And you know, you're constantly evolving as well. And I think this is where, you know, and I know these are very strange times and opportunity is, you know, everywhere, but it's also patchy. No.
Yeah.
And there is always, you know, there is always merit in going back and really taking a look at yourself, looking at, you know, where did I start? What did I pick up there? What did I love about that job? What am I good at? What do people come to me natural? Asking yourself these questions. And one of the things I wanted to say, Caroline, which we hadn't discussed, but I know it is in context, is if anyone listening to this thinks, oh my gosh, this is so me, on the 11th of September, I'm hosting a one-day event on, you know, virtually.
Yeah.
We can't gather, but it doesn't mean to say we can't come together. And clients and connections and women who are thinking, what next for me? I'm hosting an event called Blaze Your Own Trail.
Yeah.
And your own are the words that I really emphasize, because with the best will in the world, your boss, your partner, your friends, you know, they don't really know what it is that really lights you up, yeah, how you want to balance your life. And so we're going to spend a day looking at purpose and passion and professionalism,
okay,
and your pathway. So that will be available soon. And that's kwhite.com/2020 event.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure that we put a note about that somewhere on this so that people can see that and refer to it, Kay, because I know myself, having gone to these days of yours, as well as having you as an individual mentor, that they're really great. And it's worth, one of the things I learned working with you and subsequently do after that, is realize that thinking about your own career path, your passions, your what is it you want to do, what unfulfilled things haven't you done yet, and how you're going to do them, you know. And I think this is quite interesting to me, that parallel with your 25 years in Willis and coming up not so distant future, 25 years of you doing your own thing, which you love and are fantastic at, that you know, that time spent thinking about yourself and what you want from a career and to add value somewhere is time well spent, not time wasted. It's not self-indulgent. It's not superficial. It's really valuable, but you have to carve that time out somehow. And I think, I know for me, that's where you helped me make me do that and make it feel that it was the right and the proper thing to do, not the, you know, not just a sort of, you know, honestly, Karen, you know, just thinking about yourself again moment. So, but it has real value. So that, thank you for that. Now I do it all the time. It's like people, oh God, you're thinking about yourself again. But no, it's a very, very useful exercise.
You can live a life of, there's a phrase and I can't remember it, where you're screaming inside.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going through the motions. And, you know, I know, again, I'm not suggesting being reckless and throwing it all up in the air and saying, right, fix me. But, you know, to take some time for yourself to actually think about what next. And I'm looking actually at a quote that I have, a little calendar that I send out to my clients each year. You may have your own.
I have one actually here on my desk. Thank you very much.
In August, the quote is from Sir Dominic Cadbury. And he says, there is no such thing as a career path. There is only crazy paving and you have to lay it yourself.
That's great. Yeah.
And when I heard that, someone came up to me after I'd spoken somewhere and said, oh my gosh, you said so much. And it reminded me of Sir Dominic Cadbury's, you know, and I remember thinking, I must write that down, because it's very easy to look at other people and think, yeah, oh, she's got it all down, or oh, yeah, that was easy. And I often show a slide of a straight line of what people think success looks like. It's a straight line. And what success really looks like. And it's a swirly, whirly, roller coastery.
Squiggly. It's just a complete squiggle, isn't it?
And I think that's comforting. I don't think that's overwhelming, yeah, no, if anything. I think it's comforting because it gives you permission to think, well, okay, I'm a bit of a cul-de-sac at the moment. I need to get back on, you know, off this roundabout and onto the hard shoulder and think about it for a while.
Yeah. And I think that's all, and it's all right, isn't it, that your career path is like that. It's all right. Whereas when you go back to your point earlier, and we discussed earlier, when you have things like CVs and you have the expectations of the recruitment world and what companies expect to see, blah, 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 you know, the reality and what people look at to assess you before you've even got through a door are often quite different, aren't they?
Yep,
you
know? Absolutely.
So it's good to know that I like knowing that the squiggly line is fine. I think it's very comforting.
Everyone has a version of it.
So we started this, we're in strange times, and I think there'll be a lot of people contemplating what next looks like for them. whether it's forced upon them or whether it's something they're thinking, right, I've realized what are those things that are important to me during this time. You know, men or women, you know, those things they've enjoyed out of lock time, and there will be some that they think, I don't want my future to look the same. How do they, is there a sort of something that you could say, or it's a really hard question probably, is there something that you could say that people should do to start to formalize that thinking, or to work out if it's just a you know, a pie in the sky moment of feeling slightly discombobulated from the normal process and rhythms of life? Now, if people are feeling like that, what would you have any advice to give them about what they do about that?
Well, last week I was working with someone who has 5 options. So she has a lot of options at the moment.
Wow.
And we sat and did a sort of filter that I learned from another mentor of mine, Andrea, in Canada, because I don't necessarily stay with one mentor all the time, because it's like I need to learn other things. And Andrea has this filter, and what I would say is a place to start. If you get this sense of, oh my gosh, I need something else is out there. And as I say, to think about, give yourself more time than just this exercise. But this is a place to start. You do 3, well, you do 6 columns. And the 6 columns have hell yes at the top.
Okay.
And then the next column has because. And then the next column has hell no. And then the next column has because.
Right, okay.
And then the fifth and the sixth have maybe. And then the column says because. Hell yes, hell no, and maybe.
Maybe.
And they have to have, and Andrew taught this, you have to have the hell bit first. If you don't like the phrase, it can be really yes.
Yeah.
Because it has to have energy. You have to feel strongly about it. Hell yes, I wanted to work with people. Hell no, I didn't want to do any more insurance contracts in the same way. Hell yes, I loved speaking French. And you know, and hell no, I didn't want to live in Paris. And the becauses help you go through the exercise, because then you can start, if you don't put the because, which is what I learned, you have to explain it to someone else that you might be talking to about it when you've actually had this download.
Okay.
And then the maybe column is a place to put the stuff that you don't quite know belongs in a hell yes or hell no. So you've got it there. So your brain isn't like, oh, but what about the way you love doing this and all the people you like to work with? And you help yourself sort it out.
Okay.
She was going to go off and do that with these options, which she knew weren't all right for her, but they were in the mix.
Yeah.
There were some parts of them that had the hell yeses. Because if you start to at least know what you don't want.
Yes.
Which is the hell no, it might be that your whole role is full of hell no's. Then if you know that, excuse me, if you at least know that, then you've got a place to, okay, well, what's the opposite of this? How can I flip that I don't like doing this, 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 and this? Well, what does that really mean? That's a place to start, Karen.
I think that's really valuable, because we often have these thoughts and you need some structure around them, don't you? And that seems to me to be an excellent piece of advice about how to go about structuring it. And it will give you a foundation to working out how you get to the next place, who you need to talk to, and so on. I think that's a very good piece of advice. So, you know, coming to the, you know, I've known you for a while now. And so coming to the end of this, one of the things I always, you know, like people to understand, because you're fascinating in terms of career and inspiring women and men for the next stages and making them think about their lives and value and worth, and et cetera. But you have some, you know, you're a very dynamic person, Kay. So tell us something that we might not know about you. And I'm prompting you this because I know what it is I want you to say. So, but people might not know that you do have a particular sort of hobby.
So this again goes back to what it is you love, what you want, what you've always loved. And I always, growing up on a diet of very heavy rock and roll, thrown in with a bit of punk back in the day, I always loved and was admiring the drummer in a band. And this is from, you know, Thin Lizzy, Guns N' Roses, Status Quo, Led Zeppelin, you know, Iron Maiden, whatever.
You have to throw ZZ Top in there, because they're right up there for me.
The Police, Stuart Copeland, Dave Grohl, Nirvana, blah, blah. So, I said, oh, you know, one day I'd love to learn to play the drums. I'd love to have a clue how to, you know, which way around to hold a drumstick, for example. And I got to, I think it was about, I was early 50s at the time. And I remember thinking to myself, and I'd said this to a client, you have to stop talking about it and you either do it or let it go, because it's energy, trapped energy. If you keep saying, I must learn Japanese one day, get on and do it or let it go, because you have this, oh, I should have learned Japanese and I haven't learned Japanese. And so I had the same epiphany of myself. I was like, Kate, drink your own medicine. You've been talking about drumming and not drumming. So go and find a drum teacher. So this is again, so to answer your question, I can play the drums. I play heavy rock and I've played in a couple of gigs in the city in the insurance market.
See, it's the heavy rock bit I love, Kate. It's the heavy rock bit, because you're so polished and lovely. It's not to say heavy rockers aren't lovely, but you are so, and the fact that you are a heavy rock fan, it just fills me with happiness on so many levels.
Finn and Lizzie were my absolute, so anyway, rather than digressing.
Sorry.
Rather than thinking I need to be Dave Grohl, because let's be honest, Dave Grohl is Dave Grohl. If you don't know him, look him up. He's great. But I just thought, you have to start somewhere. So where do you start? Like I know, like I will always say to a client, what's the first move towards something? Not to be Dave Grohl, but what's the first move towards something? So I found a local drum teacher and I thought, I'll pay for a couple of lessons and see if I've got rhythm, if I like it, whatever. So again, I found a drum teacher who has converted, who knew that this happened, a big white van that you'd use for furniture removal. And he's converted it into a drum studio, soundproofed it, air conditioned. Yes. So my first lesson, I went inside this strange van with Neil, who's become a good friend and a very patient drum teacher. Because I have learned to play the drums like I learned to play to speak French. I didn't want to study the grammar to the extent of getting everything right. I wanted to be able to converse enough to be dangerous and obviously sometimes say some things I didn't mean to say. But it was the same with my drumming. I didn't want to do grades. And I just said, I want to be able to play rock. And there's a basic beat and I want to learn how to do that and then do some flowery things. So 6 months into my lessons, which we continued, and I bought an electronic drum kit, and everyone that comes to the house always assumes that they're my husband's, but they're not.
There we go.
And then my husband's company was sponsoring a band coming over from Germany to do a gig in the city to raise money for breakfasts to be supplied to kiddies' schools in the inner city. And so my husband, who is a bit of a kind of daredevil, he said, why don't we put you forward and you could play a track or so in the band? And I was like, okay then, let's see. Because I always say yes before I'm ready. It's one of the things that I've learned to do. And I knew that the gig was in February and this was about June. So I had a long time to learn if it was a yes. And it took a while for it to be a yes. Then we had to choose a track. Then we chose the track and it was Whiskey in the Jar, which I thought was by Thin Lizzy. And that's quite a slow track if you know it. And the band came back and said, oh no, it's by Metallica. It's really noisy and fast. So I did. I played for the first time live in a city boozer, for want of a better word, with this band. And I played Whiskey in the Jar by Metallica and I loved it.
That's fabulous.
And it was so exciting to play live. I did buy an acoustic kit. We do have space on one side of our house where there's no one, so I play without stressing the neighbours. And it's been a great outlet for, you know, energy, because you can crash around on the drums.
Yeah.
And then the next year, I played two tracks for them, but I don't want to be in a band. And again, this is that hell yes, hell no, maybe.
Yeah.
Hell yes, playing occasionally. Hell yes, learning, but hell no.
No, not for it, it's a great lesson though, isn't it, to, you know, you're saying take your own medicine, Kay, and follow through. I always want to do this, on I need to sit down and do it. I need to and find a level then to continue afterwards that works for you. But that initial decision of doing something you've always said you were going to do just is a total release, isn't it? It's a total
absolutely. And again, this is being to use the phrase I use a lot, perfectly imperfect. I didn't get it all right. The band were looking at each other because I missed a bit of a sort of fill playing Doctor Doctor by UFO. I mean, that's a whole crack. And I got quite long hair and I was shaking my hair because I was like, no, I was going no underneath. And everyone thought I was jamming it out and loving every minute.
That's great. That's such a great story. So, you know, Kate, you've been fascinating to talk to. And there's some great stuff in here, I think, that people can take away and use practically, but also take some inspiration about if they find themselves at a crossroads in these unusual times and this pause potentially in their normal working lives, that there is a way to start thinking about how to follow your passion and you know, use what you know.
Well, differently.
You know,
often people say, oh, but what's my purpose and where's my passion? And it's a big question.
Yes, it is.
If you break that down to make it more appealing and more kind of manageable, it's like, what is it that I love to do that I would do if someone, you know, if I wasn't being paid? I would sit and chat with someone, like I have at a wedding. A lot of Snow's friends are scared of me because I go deep with them. It's like, well, how's your love life happening? What are you doing? You know, because I do that naturally and I have to rein myself in sometimes. So to actually be able to do it and be paid.
It's marvellous. Well, I'm going to say to everybody that listens to this, you know, check out kaywhite.com. There's a whole load of great stuff on there. See what Kay does. Look at the scene here. Check out the, I had it earlier, Kay, the power pack for...
Working from home
power pack, because it's great, and take a listen and a look at all that's there. So kaywhite.com, I mean, recommend you check it out. And thank you very much for today, Kay, for being very inspirational and you know, the heavy rock drumming queen. That's awesome.
Thank you very much, Karen. I've enjoyed it myself.
That's great. Okay, thanks, Kay.
Bye for now.
Bye.